Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the show. Albert on the line, and I'm going to go straight into a segment about the Venezuelan crisis. We are going to talk about three separate topics tonight. First, we're talking about the Venezuelans who are migrating to Bogota, Colombia, to try to get work, but they have to cross four to 900 miles on foot in a steep mountain pass. Also, how it's inflated 1,000,000%. There's hardly any nurses or doctors in hospitals. There's no medical help, and this part will explain it. One moment, please.
Last year, more than 28,000 people applied for that status, five times the number in 2015. They're fleeing political turmoil and a country in economic freefall that is threatening its neighbors. Today, the Brazilian military is deploying to a region along its border with Venezuela that has suffered a spike in violence since Venezuelan refugees arrived. Millions of Venezuelans have fled the surrounding countries in South and Central America. As Nick Schifrin reports, it is a refugee crisis that the United Nations warns could soon equal the one ongoing in the Mediterranean.
For millions of Venezuelans, the line between starvation and survival is the border with Peru. Refugees bring only what they can carry, along with their entire families, fleeing their homeland. On the Ecuadorian border, refugees take over a highway. They've been walking for hundreds of miles and hope to escape a life that's become unbearable. And on the Brazilian border, little girls carry what's most valuable. Families at the border wait for their turn, wait for what they hope is a better life. I came here to work and help my family because you can't back there. Venezuela President Nicolas Maduro has overseen an economic catastrophe. Inflation is predicted to be 1,000,000%. Pulverizing incomes, spreading hunger, and crumbling health services. Sky TV recently filmed in a hospital in an area held by the opposition. Patients sleep behind staircases in dark corridors. Most doctors have left due to lack of salaries. Those still here work for nearly free. Margaret Gamboa is a medical student.
Everything here is so sad. I can not help them because they need help. There is nobody here.
One of the few remaining doctors shows off cabinets supposed to be full of medicine, today empty. This boy needs antibiotics the hospital doesn't have. And in a nearby room, a mother shows cell phone video of her daughter, once a dancer in the orange dress, now nearly immobilized by a brain tumor. But there's no cancer medicine in Venezuela, so her mother and Yuri Fuentes will try and make the difficult journey to Colombia.
Because she's my daughter, I have to support her. We've been here for 2 months.
The conditions have created an exodus of 2.3 million and a regional migration crisis, says Colombia's migration director, Christian Cruz.
We cannot lie to ourselves. We are talking about a nation of nearly 30 million residents that clearly will continue leaving their country. Regional nations must unite.
To try and fix the economy, the government recently raised salaries by 3,500% and introduced a new currency with five fewer zeros. But in a country full of long gas lines, ATM lines, and groceries that can cost 2 weeks of people's salaries, that may be too little, too late. this Venezuelan business organization, President Carlos Larrazabal.
Si no se controla la without controlling the hyperinflation, the impact of these incremental changes will be totally counterproductive.
The Maduro government says it's preventing chaos and fighting internal and external enemies. Maduro himself urges Venezuelans to stay home. Even if life isn't perfect, he says, leaving is worse. Some Venezuelans who left the country to clean toilets, I'm saying this even if it hurts, have left to become economic slaves abroad.
For more on all this,
okay, I'm going to stop it.
Professor of political.
I also watched a segment where there was like 15 tents in Bogota, Colombia, and there was 12 portable bathrooms for 480 people. And the Colombian people try to bring food into the refugee camp, and the authorities wouldn't let them, and they wouldn't let people leave. And anyone who talked to the media was not let back into the refugee camp. So it is a major crisis. It's ridiculous. And I don't know if I would leave the country if I knew I was going to starve or my feet would grow bloody, because some people walked through a mountainside area and their feet were bloody after 100 miles. Hi, Albert. How are you doing?
Yeah, surviving.
Good. Hi, Don. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, Jane. Hey, Albert.
Yeah, so tonight I was going to talk about a couple different topics. The Venezuelan crisis has morphed, and there's 2.3 million refugees going in multiple directions. 28,000 have applied for asylum in the U.S., but that's not probably going to happen with Trump almost closing the U.S.-Mexico border, because there's another crisis of about 30,000 people trying to come into our land in five different points of Texas. All the sites are overcrowded, and they had to let some people into the community because there was nowhere to put them. So we're going to migrate from the Venezuelan crisis into the U.S.-Mexico border crisis, and then maybe talk about what else has happened this week in United States politics. Would anyone care to comment? And, Don, I want to hear about your trip to Vegas. Pat posted a lot of pictures.
No, it wasn't Vegas. We haven't been to Vegas in a little while. It's Carson City, maybe.
She posted some pictures of Vegas, I thought. You were in a hotel.
Has
anybody been following the Venezuelan crisis?
Well, I know Russia came over to Venezuela, and, you know, the Venezuela president and Russia's president, they're both chatting, and, you know, of course, the U.S. government did not like it at all, you know, Russia and the U.S. government, well, Russia's government and the U.S. government. Not the people. The people on both sides are, you know, people, you know. But the government, of course, the Russian government, the U.S. government, of course, don't like each other. And so the Russian government now is in Venezuela trying to help out the Venezuela government and assist. You know, they bought some, I don't know, like about, like 300 Russian militaries are occupying Venezuela right now. And so, you know, because, of course, Venezuela's
powers on it. Just let me ask you this, Albert, though. If you had to spend 2 weeks of a salary on groceries and inflation was 1,000,000%, would you leave the country? By the way, Mike from Singapore is on the line, but I'll pull him in a minute.
Well,
so would you leave
the
country if,
let's
say you made $650 every 2 weeks or a Would you spend every last nickel on food, or would you try to find a way out, or would it seem unrealistic?
Well, I mean, I'm not too sure. I had to be there. You know, it's kind of a very hard decision. I mean, you really have to be there to be able to, you know, look at a first perspective and make a real decision. So I'm not too sure. But I can really tell you, you know, to the bottom of it, what's been happening before then, you know? I mean, you know, you had the U.S. government, like, you know, Donald Trump and other major U.S. government officials, they declared Juan Guaido the president of Venezuela before he even declared himself, you know? And they've been supporting him. They even had CIA operatives come over there and, you know,
we know that,
Juan
but how about all the chaos in the streets? I kind of wanted to talk about the human side of it tonight. Like, one lady crossed the mountains from Venezuela into Colombia, and she woke up the next morning and her baby was dead in her arms.
Yeah, but look at right now what's happening. Okay, Venezuela has been having power for many years, and the power has been going finally. And now, for some reason, they're having power surges. The power is going out. You know what I mean? And you know they've been. I mean, they never had this kind of electricity shortage through the whole village, where the whole city is going dark black with no electricity at all. This doesn't happen. This hasn't been happening for Venezuela for many years, and now it's happening. After CIA officials are in Venezuela right now, helping Juan Guaido. There's a lot of connection going on. There's things that are unexplained. You know, power just doesn't go out.
Yeah,
all
that
of
makes
sense.
You might be right. There might be some form of sabotage. With that, I'm going to bring Mike in. Hi, Mike.
Yes, dear Jane and Dawn, and who else are on the line, please?
Albert, hey, Jane, Mike. And Dawn. And we're talking about, first I discussed there's over 2.3 million refugees going into Colombia and Ecuador. There's problems in the refugee camp in Bogota. People aren't being fed. They're literally starving to death right in Venezuela, too. People are going through the streets for garbage because they can't have enough to eat and they can't afford what's in the stores. Have you been following
absolutely.
It?
Absolutely, yeah, yeah.
Hey,
yeah,
Mike.
Of course. Yes, hello, Don. Greetings to you from Asia. And
say hi
Albert,
to Albert,
too, and Jane. Yes,
say
hi to
hi
Albert,
to
too,
Albert.
As well, indeed. I did say hi
okay,
to Albert.
Okay,
what's
your take?
You got me...
What's your take
okay.
on the situation?
Yes. Yes. Yeah, the Venezuela crisis, unfortunately, is very sad for Latin America. From one side, you know, we don't want refugees in the United States of America. And from another side, we create our own misery in Latin America. Our embargo on Venezuela, it hurts the people, not the governments, actually. But now the people hurt,
right.
As you mentioned earlier, 3 million, we say. 3 million went to Colombia and by boat or by swimming through the rivers and et cetera. Okay, so now we're creating 3 million refugees for Colombia. Colombia say, hey,
let's talk about Venezuela, but also Trump cut off aid to the Guatemalans and three or four other Central American countries because he's pissed off about the border problem. But my question Venezuela is on the ocean. Why don't people try escaping by boat?
I mean, to go to where? I mean, to the Brazilian Air Navy.
They could go to the Dominican Republic
or
Nicaragua or Cuba or Costa Rica.
Argentina. I mean, it takes, you know, you have to go to the jungles 1,000 miles at least, if not more. And the jungles, it's very hard to keep going up, and with mosquito bites, with lack of food, water, and hygiene, you are dead anyway. So that's why they cannot go there. And, you know, that's, unfortunately, we create our own misery. I'm sorry. Donald Trump embargo on Venezuela because he doesn't like the president elected.
So is that why
Maduro?
The people have to pay like $20 for toothpaste? Because we've made an embargo on them.
Yes, that, and we did the same thing to Iraq during the George Bush, and 5,000 Iraqi kids died every month. Yes, we have the war crimes. We have made war crimes against many other countries as well. So this is only...
Yeah, there was no medicine in the hospital in one of the interviews I watched.
Yes, and there's no IV, and there is no... really any kind of service that they can give to anybody. I mean, if you're sick or you need medical help, you're screwed up, unfortunately. And thanks to Donald J. Trump. Go ahead, Bruce.
I can't believe, I'm going to let Albert and Don go, but I can't believe people are crossing the mountains from Venezuela to Bogota. He's right, there's steep mountain passes. Some of them are only foot trails, and people are, like, carrying their babies through there. Like, it's pretty insane.
Go ahead, please. Don and Albert, please come in. Go ahead, dear brothers. Go ahead.
You guys, talk.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
No, no. I mean, this is, in a way, it's not our war. We've got our problems here, but, you know, as I said many, many times, millions of times, we brought it on ourselves. We had the leadership, I'll call them that, try to be nice, bringing over, undocumented all the time for years. We're based on, you know, the country was built on slavery. We can't get involved in something that we caused. This is like the emergency, you know, the president's emergency declaration. When you cause something, how can you ask help to, you know, if it's an embarrassment, it should be a disgrace to go ahead and ask for help in solving something that you caused. That's ridiculous. So in a way, Venezuela is not our fight. We're trying our best for the Guatemalan and the Honduran population to slow down, which they won't. And, this is going to be something.
Yeah, I think it is pretty insane that I heard today that Donald Trump was inflating the immensity of the problem on the Mexican border. But why are so many people coming to the border when they know that Trump doesn't want them?
Because of jobs. You heard this clip. Everybody
well, because
sanctions. For work and money and take care of their family. That's what the clip said.
Venezuela has been put under sanctions by the U.S. government and their NATO allies. Put them in sanctions, which means they can't buy food, water, and stuff like that from the U.S. and other allied countries. And here's another thing, not the sanctions. But also the U.S. government has also put a hold into Venezuela's president's bank account. Through the PayPal or Visa.
We confiscated their money. Yes, we confiscated their money.
The president they froze
the Maduro.
Oh.
Yeah, they froze his bank account.
And then
it'll be harder for him to maintain his people that believe in him, right? To buy food and water for his people, right? I mean they believe in him, so obviously if you strategically freeze his bank account and then put and make it harder for him,
Well, does the United States own all the banks in Venezuela?
Yeah, they got the NATO allies, yeah, they have banks in Venezuela, run by the Western allies, but yeah, I mean, the U.S. does have banks
in Venezuela. Yes, they do.
Absolutely. Well, and again,
so the president not just got loans from the United States, but they also got loans from China, and they got small loans from Russia, and they got loans from the U.S. That the U.S.
Okay, I found an article. The Bank of England has blocked Nicolas Maduro's officials from withdrawing $1.2 billion worth of gold, Bloomberg reported, dealing a further blow to the embattled president. According to the report, which cites unnamed people, the gold is a significant part of the $8 billion in foreign reserves held by the Venezuelan Central Bank. The move by the Bank of England came after top U.S. officials urged the British government to help cut off Maduro's access to his country's assets, the report said, and instead steered them towards the opposition leader Juan Guaido. Good Lord. Our countries are brutal. Cutting off people's money.
That's what I said there last time. I said last time we talked about Venezuela, I said it's the same thing. I mean, we, the other guy, which is not elected by the people of Venezuela. I forgot his name right now. But and then we bring him
Maduro
to USA Council. Him.
Guaido.
And who the hell we are that we are interfering in the affairs of another country? That's against the United Nations. It's against the Cyrus the Great, in 2,500 years ago, when he conquered the Babylon, and then he let the Jewish people and give them money and said, go ahead and take care of yourself and your house, and don't let anybody come anymore to enslave you next time. And you have ready everything. If anybody wants to attack you, to be ready for that. So we can see is we have to learn from the Cyrus the Great 2,500 years ago. I mean, we are not going to go and mess up other nation because it come and bite us in the house in United States.
Yeah,
I'm just going to say Juan Guaido is not in the best state either. The Venezuelan Supreme Court has ordered a travel ban on opposition leader Juan Guaido and froze his bank accounts. He can't leave the country until a preliminary investigation is complete that he caused harm to the peace of the republic. The 35-year-old opposition leader who declared himself interim president, blah, 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 blah. So anyways, he's kind of got his arms locked in a little dispute, too.
Yeah, Maduro. Yeah, yeah.
No, that
Maduro
was Juan Guaido.
Second...
He can't leave the country.
His assets
are frozen. So my opinion is, do you think there's fat cat officials living off the land while the public starves? Like, do you think there's people behind the scenes who have plenty of access to food?
Well, yeah,
of course.
There's always somebody behind the scenes. No matter what country you go to, there's always somebody behind the scenes that's getting more than the others.
Exactly. Even in the United States, what do you think? In case of a massive earthquake or massive catastrophe, whether it's Wyoming or because of Nebraska is underwater, and finally other states, people went there and helped to their own people. They don't, but if you want to wait for National Guard to come, you will be dead.
Are you talking about Nebraska or Venezuela?
I mean, at this time, I changed the subject a little bit to Nebraska. It's the same thing happened. Of course, United States has a massive amounts of the food and et cetera ready for their, you know, they call it the hierarchy. But for regular people, of course, like Nebraska, what happened? Did they open the food and drop it for them through the by helicopter. Of course, they don't care for the people of the United States, do they?
No, well, I mean, the United States spends like 70% of their tax dollars to the big military industrial military complex, and we got places that like Flint, Michigan, right? The water system has been going bad for many years, and then too many cutbacks on government jobs that actually help keep the water clean. You know, I mean, it's a big issue, and it's kept them going on for a while. And it even got to the point where the government actually knew it, didn't do anything about it, until people were literally getting poisoned by the water, by the Flint, Michigan water. You're living in the United States and you're drinking poisoned water because of the cutbacks on to keep our water clean. And the military-industrial complex is just getting bigger and bigger. Like, what about the people of the U.S.? Right? What about us?
Yeah, Nebraska, Iowa, and other flooded areas, and keep going down to Mississippi and Florida very soon. But the question is, Nebraska was hit. We never had a very short story. I checked everything. Really, nobody coverage Nebraska flood. Even Nebraska TV stations really—they did not. 75 cities underwater, and 70 counties underwater. Man, nobody talks about it. News, total news censorship in old good USA.
Yeah, and here's the something that the U.S. government won't talk about. Now, if you let me, I'd like to just play a short video for like 1 minute, just a 1 minute video.
Sure, that's okay.
All right.
Has revealed that a 2010 U.S. regime change blueprint proposed Venezuelan electricity blackouts could be used as a watershed event for galvanizing public unrest. The blueprint was authored by Sergio Popovich.
Sergius Popovich. By the way, yeah.
Why would the Russians cut off their electricity?
Right. Why would the Russians cut off the electricity? Right, they wouldn't do that, right? It was literally authorized by one of the U.S. governments called Sergian Popovich. Well, I can't even pronounce his name, but it's really, really. What?
You know, I hate to say it, but that whatever you're playing seems a little hyper. What news service is that? The Russian one? The RT News?
Youth activists in countries where the West seeks regime change.
Yeah, that's it.
Democracy for.
Alright, that was the finish of it.
Okay.
Did you hear that?
Okay.
I heard it, but it seemed a little inflated or hyperbole.
I could hear it, but
it was faded. And I don't want to hear any more for now, but maybe in the future.
Okay. Yeah, I won't play any right now because the fan's going. I got a fan going. It's really hot inside here, and I can't have the air conditioning going on right now, so I just have a fan going on right now.
I could hear it loud and clear. I'm just saying it seemed like a third string news service.
Exactly.
They were exploiting the fact that somebody might have done something. So if the United States and Russia have that much control over how governments operate, they're trying to protect something. They're trying to either get a foothold in the Venezuelan oil, or they're trying to disrupt the country enough to cause chaos.
Well, true. I mean, you also see this happen in other countries like Syria, right? I mean, you got Russia supporting the Syrian president, and Bashar al-Assad, they're Russian giving them military equipment and whatnot. to support him, you know, and the U.S. is against him, right? And then you got other vice versa countries like Afghanistan, you know, where, where the U.S. already has control, but Russia is trying to, you know, topple over the president. So it's kind of sometimes in some countries it's backwards, it's the other way, and then some countries it's the other way, depending who has more control, the U.S. or Russia. And it's all these proxy wars that are really hurting the people in third world countries.
Well, I think the dynamics in the Middle East are a little different, though, because ISIS had a stronghold in Syria, and the combination of that with the animosity of the Israeli people towards the Syrian government and their fear of power brokering into that nation, like, there's so much. The dynamics of the Middle East are so different. In the case of the United States, bullying somebody in their own hemisphere, that's more, it's more believable.
But he's bullying people here.
I know that we have a foothold in the Middle East and we wanted to get rid of ISIS, but Russia's been a main actor there. But go ahead, Don, I'll let you talk.
No, I just wanted to say, but you're missing it. He's bullying people in the United States. He's pulling money from Puerto Rico, California fires. He's pulling money from everywhere. He wants to fund his projects that he can't get money for, and he wants to continue to funnel money into his friends' bank accounts. That's all he wants, is to rape the American taxpayer.
Exactly.
That's what he wants. That's what he's doing.
Well, you're right, John, by suggesting that he closes the border. There's a lot of people who go back and forth across the U.S.-Mexican border for work. There's interstate commerce or international commerce. There's businesses the U.S. own in Mexico and vice versa, and it's just ridiculous that he thinks he could shut down the whole border.
Exactly.
He can shut it down if he wants, but the thing is...
it's still ridiculous. Like, remember the trade agreement we created with Mexico in his first year in office?
Money.
What about that?
He's making money on it all.
Look at the borders that got shut down in North Korea, right? I mean, you got Kim Jong-un, right? Many years ago, right, when the U.S., got in South Korea and, had a lot of influence in South Korea and... Kim Jong-un saw that as a threat, and there's a lot of other stuff going on, by the way. But anyways, he literally closed his borders and didn't allow any foreign media by anybody else coming up to his country. So he gained a strong foothold and a lot of good control of his country, Kim Jong-un, I mean, of course, I'm not saying he's a good guy. I mean, I'm pretty sure he's a bad guy. He's a really bad person. But he made sure to get a good foothold control of this country to now not any foreign media that would go against him, and for like a regime change, right?
That's not, that wasn't America that did that, though.
Let me
talk. Can I talk? Venezuela's closing out.
Yeah, don't worry, Mike. We have
plenty
of time to talk tonight.
It's not exactly like North Korea. Venezuela is closing off, and it's not super closed off like North Korea. But Venezuela is kind of closing off because all the foreign media. Of course, the president of Venezuela is not going to trust the foreign media, especially from the U.S., right? He's not going to trust them.
They follow Carlos Slim. Look up Carlos Slim. He runs the country, not Maduro, not Guaido. They don't run the country. Carlos Slim runs Venezuela.
Yeah, I'll look
him
up while you guys talk, but give Mike a chance to talk.
Go ahead.
Hey, yes. Don and Albert, we all are agree in the fact that we have no business to interfere in the efforts of any countries. And we know that Iran, Mossadegh, 1951, we created chaos and we created a coup against Dr. Mohammad Mossadegh. And then later on, we brought Shah of Iran. Shah of Iran was, well, said nationalize oil that Dr. Mohammad Mossadegh said is okay, and he was putting everything into infrastructure of Iran. Iran was becoming a superpower in, Persian Gulf. Then, at the time of Jimmy Carter, they said, well, you know, we cannot allow that happen. So they created another coup attempt against Shah of Iran this time, second coup, and told him, you are sick, it's okay, go out of country, come to USA and we take care of you, and then you go back again. And then while that happened, Ayatollah Khomeini from Iraq, which he was born actually in India, he came through a via de France, Air France, to Iran and created a terrorist Islamic Republic of Iran. And up to today, Iranians are saying, thank you, Shah of Iran. Still, Shah of Iran is in their heart, even if they cannot celebrate, say it. But they say it. They say, Shah, we love you still. They know what he has serviced the country, served the country, not using the oil money and put it in Dubai and like what they're doing. The current regime is putting money into Dubai schools, is putting in Syria, putting in Hezbollah of Lebanon, which is a terrorist arm of the Iranian Hezbollah. So then, therefore, people get nothing in Iran. People right now work 1 year. They haven't got paid yet. They are right now, people are pissed. Every day there is demonstration in Iran, but nobody hears about it.
Yes, well, I remember the coup attempt that happened like 2 or 3 years ago in Turkey, on the country, the country of Turkey. And this time, of course, it wasn't the U.S. because the U.S. has nuclear bombs in Turkey and they kind of support the president leader over there. It was actually the Russian, right? It was the Russians. A lot of blame speculation was on the Russians to try to coup up Kent to take out the Russian leader in Turkey, right? And so sometimes it's the U.S. and sometimes it's Russia, right? They're both superpowers. And their allies it's kind of like they're trying to take over the world. And by the way, Don, on what you said, who's really controlling Venezuela, by the way. And by the way, Juan Guaido in Venezuela, the U.S. funds soft power organization that helped train Juan Guaido coup leaders like John Gordon and his allies, by the way. Just to answer a quick question of what he said 10 minutes ago.
I forgot the question.
Yes, actually.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance. I didn't get a chance to come back to what you were talking about. So that's. But I come back.
Don, that Carlos Slim guy is a multi-billionaire who out of Mexico, not Venezuela, but he owns a telecommunication company that affects every part of Latin America.
Right, and that's who runs much of Latin America.
Yes, I need to correct Albert, Sir Albert, my friend. You said the Turkey coup was made by Russia. That's misinformation. It was made by Kalarik Fethullah Gulen, which lives in Pennsylvania. And that's why the coup happened, but it was unsuccessful.
I got this from the president himself during his speech. Literally, the president of Turkey was literally blaming Russia. Literally, he literally said it from his own mouth. I remember that.
Are you talking about that
like
guy who was living in Pennsylvania, who was a relative of the Turkish aristocracy?
Yes. That's a Sufi. Yeah,
I heard about that from you guys.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Fethullah Gulen. And that's why it happened. I mean, Russia did not have any fingerprint on it, and I am sure United States with Fethullah fingerprints for sure. I mean, Fethullah's fingerprint is there. Since he lives in the United States, I'm sure everybody else's fingerprints is right there too.
Right.
Yeah, it's like the Game of Thrones, right? The Game of Thrones, right? You got the superpowers going around and, you know, funding programs and organizations what they so they can gain foothold and control in certain regions of the earth, you know. So it's the Game of Thrones.
I think the only reason they're interested in Venezuela though is because of oil. Venezuela used
oil,
to be the fourth largest oil producer of the world.
Yes, that's true.
And also Middle East is also the same thing. Any country has oil, we'll never see democracy. Go ahead, please.
True. Can I read a little bit about this Carlos Slim guy? Because he's pretty interesting.
Please.
Carlos Slim was born January in 1940 in Mexico City, Mexico. His parents, Julian Slim Haddad and Linda Hetu Atta, were both Maronite Catholics of Lebanese descent. In other words, they were Christian Lebanese that emigrated. Carlos' father was born Cahil Salim Haddad Aglamaz, was sent to Mexico in 1902 to avoid being drafted into the Ottoman army. After arriving in Mexico, Carlos' father changed his name to Julian Slim Haddad. The family was part of a small but commercially prosperous community of Lebanese Christians who poured into Mexico in the late 1800s and early 1900s. In a community devoted to commerce, Julian Slim was a natural, opening up a dry goods store. Well, now I'm going to skip on to the other part. So he built this telecommunications company, and then he got control of like 70% of the copper mining industry. So let me just read this. By 2012, America Movil, Slim's mobile telephone company, had taken over Telmex and made it to a private health subsidiary. It had a market share of 70% of the mobile phone line market, and 80% of the landlines in Mexico. Now the company is poised to sell assets to bring its market share below 50% in the wake of an anti-monopoly regulation. But he's worth over $65 billion. And he controls copper mines and everything else that reaches its artery all the way into the southern Latin countries. I just thought it was an interesting story. They were Lebanese immigrants.
Oh, okay, because whatever, he controls a lot of the media, a lot of, like you said, the mining, and he has some oil interests, too. So Carlos Slim used to be the richest man in the world. So
yeah, he has a conglomerate of 20 shopping centers in Mexico. He purchased a Duke Simon's mansion in New York City. In 2015, he put it for sale at $80 million. He purchased two commercial buildings in the U.S. One was PepsiCo, north of New York City, and the Marquette Building in Detroit. He owns things all over the world.
Well,
yes,
he must
yes.
have some
so,
inside info.
Mm-hmm. I think if all of us did, like, 1 hour of research of Latin America, we've all done a pretty good job tonight, but we could find out a lot more.
Of course.
I know a lot more about Brazil, how it went from a socialist country to a democracy, but Venezuela, the only thing I know about is the history when Hugo Chavez was the president and how he bucked the system way back then. But he did a lot of reforms and improvements back then.
Well, just like you said, the Latin American countries are extremely complex because they're made up of everybody. Everybody has come down there and shit on Latin America, especially the Spanish and the Germans after, you know, the half of the Nazis, I don't know half, but a large number of the Nazis running away. You've got a Chinese.
That was in Argentina.
That's all
mainly.
Over. It's all over. They stopped at the, just like the slaves, blacks are, you know, a huge part of the population down there. And they claim the indigenous card, if you want to call it that, because they've been there, you know, they were Indians from the migration to North America through that country. So, you know, you've got Eskimos and everybody else who lives in
Let
South
me
America.
Ask you this, Don, Mike, and Albert. What do you guys think of the United States and Mexico merging into one country?
You mean North American Union? North American.
No, the United States and Mexico. We annex Mexico and we
yes.
make it a megalopolis country.
You talk about
right. No, with Canada also too.
Everybody from
so
Mexico.
So we are all three countries become one country. North American
everybody
Union.
From,
why
North
not?
North American
everybody
Union.
Freely, Jane. Everybody from Mexico will freely. Come to America. They ain't staying. They're not staying in Mexico, no matter how many corporations we start down there.
Yeah, but a lot of Mexicans have Mexican pride.
The United States started the war on drugs. We opened that up. There's a lot of drug gangsters in Mexico. They'd be, you know, the drugs will be coming in so fast. I mean, it'd be ridiculous. I mean, if
but,
they got
you know.
The citizens have papers to come across, like any citizen. I mean, I'm not against you know allowing other people to come in. If automatically if Mexicans became U.S. citizens, then they'd be coming in like nothing. And Mexico is known for having you know drug warlords.
North American Union is Canada. Mexico and U.S. have become one country, evidently, and then Amero has become the new money for these three countries. So easily you can go to Canada and use the same Amero, like a European, they
What's
use
Amero?
Euro. Amero
is
a
like
new money for the... Yes, is a North American Union money, and it's called Amero. North American Union.
Okay.
And this was a plan much before, but with the election of Donald Trump is a little bit behind right now because that's why they don't want to make a wall for, because the wall, they have to break it down again. I mean, it's spending billions next president will come and say, hell with it, break it down. That's why they keep delaying it because of North American Union. Just type North American Union and Amero, you will find many articles about that. Go ahead, please. Don, Albert, Jane, go ahead, please.
I haven't been to Mexico since 1996, and they had pesos back then. I have no
right.
clue what they're using now.
They still have.
No, pesos, it's still the same, yeah. It's $1, it's about eight or nine pesos. And Canadian,
okay.
If you go Canada, is about 40% more. It's one is equal to 140, something like that.
Yeah,
yeah. So that's
I knew
why,
that, generally
because,
speaking.
So you get 40% tax. If 70%
so
you pay
I have
tax
a question
in Canada.
For you, Mike. Since you live in a foreign country, what do the residents of Singapore think of Donald Trump in terms of his outlandish, when he always goes all the way to the extreme on his policy ideals, like closing the border, building the wall, you know, cutting off funds, like John said, to California wildfires, like, what do people over there think?
Well, you know, we know that he gave us F-35, so we have to appreciate Donald Trump. He sold us a lot of F-35 for in case of China invasion on
Singapore. They sold you airplanes and watercraft?
Yeah, F-35, yeah. And we are part of, you know, with aircraft carriers, they can come here and refuel whatever they need to do, and they can go back. I mean, and, yeah, we have a joint treaty with the United States.
So are people there more scared of China than the U.S.?
Yeah, because, you know, we are just not, all the 6 hours, 5 hours flight, but still, you know,
well,
China is
the most journalists in jail.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. Yeah, China and also Taiwan. Taiwan, both of those areas are kind of, we are always in fear because we have nice buildings in Singapore. We have infrastructure very good. And clean, less crime as possible. And so Taiwan, both, you know, they have 600 million army men. So it's very easily.
Because the people that
Taiwan
live in China.
Taiwan isn't very big.
Yeah, Taiwan is.
It's only an island, right?
Yes. It's very small island. It's the size of the not Boston, even there is Rhode Island. It's the size of Rhode Island.
Yeah, that's amazing that they have that big of an army.
Right, 600 million army. Even India.
So just so you guys know, I'm at work.
India.
And I had to use the company phone because there's no cell phone service here. I think we should end the show right at midnight in 9 minutes. Then maybe we can have another show Tuesday when John's around.
Yeah, that's fine because I've got to get up.
I think John had something to do this weekend. Right, Don?
Well, I had
that's fine.
I just came back from a dinner with the governor, a group with the governor and some of the legislators. And it's been a long day. Pat was in a plan conference all day and grassroots lobby days. And we've been working really, really hard on our laws. We've got some laws that will affect the rest of the country if they're passed. It's just amazing what Nevada is doing and the effect that Nevada will have.
Can you give us an example?
In terms of what? We're looking at popular voting is going to be big. Trust women. You know, we've got the only state in the history that the two federal senators, and we've got all kinds of other things that are first in the nation or in the lead. I'm working on some data privacy of students that will be modeled after California, and there's hardly no other state with it except for the EU, which will, you know, stop the transmission of student data, third, fourth, and fifth parties. That's going to be changing the policies all over the country. We, I was instrumental in getting the ERA passed, so now we have only one more state after Illinois passed it. But there are all kinds of others. The gun, one of the first guns.
Don, can you move into a quieter room?
With buck stops. And with buck stops.
Is that your grandchildren?
Yes. They're quiet.
God bless them. Let me. I have three news to share it with you guys. Let's come out of Venezuela for a minute, please. Retail apocalypse. JCPenney, Payless, Lifeway announces 3,000 plus combined store closures. And more than 41,000 people have lost. And another 40,000 will be lost.
Shopko up here.
Yeah, Shopko, and Walmart is also closing one by one stores. That's the red flag. Yes,
Sears, chapter 11.
Yes. And the layoff continues to mount, with JCPenney announcing this week it would be closing another 20 store additional to other stores that closed a few months ago. So that's the headline news. And then another one. This story was off the radar for some reason. I am reading it for you, but I give you a location. You can find the story. Just Google it. It was a Missouri man arrested in West Virginia I-68 while headed to White House Pentagon with gun explosive powder. This is from wboy.com. It's a Channel 12 in West Virginia.
So he tried to ice the president?
Repeat again, please.
He tried to kill the president, or he was going to?
He was going 130 miles per hour. The troopers were patrolling I-68 eastbound near Mile Maker 28 on Wednesday, 10:25 a.m., when they observed a black sedan traveling approximately 130 miles in hour in the 70-mile per zone. Troopers attempted to conduct traffic stop, but it goes faster. Finally, he comes to stop.
What an idiot.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So please go to wboy.com, the whiskey, B-O-Y.com, and just or Google it or any search engine you use. We use. Yeah, just put it, and then you can
just
research
so you
that
guys
one
know,
more.
I'm going to be playing an ending song because I have to revise some of the descriptions tonight on the show. So why don't we talk about wboy.com next week? I'm fading, and I have to hang up now. I'm on the company phone. So thank you for joining us. I'll let you guys know if there's a Tuesday show, but I appreciate everything. Everybody's participation.
We appreciate
prayers
you,
for my
too.
Son, too. He hasn't found a new job yet.
Good night. So he was fired?
Pray for your son, too.
Good night.
Have a good night. Shalom.
Shalom.